Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. We are magically delicious. It's been proven. What a day in the George Zimmerman trial today. I was not expecting it to be this big, but it certainly was. Had a little bit of a Twilight Zone feeling to it at times because the defense is calling prosecution witnesses and they're all sounding really good for the defense. Very odd way of things to happen, but we're going to figure it all out tonight. I have a guest who knows more than I do, and that's why I have her on, because she is brilliant. She's a professor from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Everybody, please welcome our good friend, Cheryl McCollum. Cheryl, welcome tonight. And I don't even know where to begin. I'm going to let you just start talking because it was just like, wow. And then I already have some questions ahead of time, but I want you to kind of recap the day for us in your own words. What other words would there be? Just your vision of what it was. It was just a wild day, I thought.
It was wild. I mean, if anybody is planning to turn this into a movie, it just got a lot better as far as the entertainment factor. I mean, honestly, as I watched today, there was this ebb and flow of it that, okay, you know, you called the investigator and she did a great job of what she heard, and they're arguing that it's hearsay, and then you bring out the lead investigator and he does a great job of saying exactly what he heard Trayvon's dad say, and no, that mm-hmm. was not him. And then they bring the, you know, other detective back, and she says, look, I was in the room. I heard what the man said. He shook his mm-hmm. hand, and he said, that's not him. And then you're thinking, cool, they've got what they needed. They will not call his father. They will not risk that emotional pull for that jury. Lo and behold, they called.
I know, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
I was like, what are you doing? You know, I mean, not that he doesn't have every right to be up there, and not that he doesn't have every right to say, you know, what occurred. I'm saying from an analyst standpoint, what are you doing? Because you didn't need him. So then you're thinking, what do they have? What do they know? What are they trying to get him to say? Are they pointing fingers at Crump? Are they pointing fingers at the police? Are the police liars? Is he a liar? Is Crump a manipulator? So you don't know where they're going. Brilliant, once again, reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. You don't know who to believe, and you can't put your eggs in any of the baskets. If you believe the police, then you got to believe George. If you believe the father, then you're not sure. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Because there's more to it. So you're telling me that they did all of these things to George, the polygraph, the arrest, the putting him in the holding cell, the interview for 5 hours. And yet they're going to protect him? That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
He's not the guy they would protect. I mean, what? And then the MMA fighter, clearly mm-hmm. credible, clearly knew his stuff. He could talk about tactics and maneuvers, and he was on for an incredibly long amount of time. But you got the understanding that, yeah, if somebody sucker punched you and got you on the ground, your life's in danger. I mean, he pretty much.
Exactly. Pretty much. That's it.
Once you're on the ground, you're done. And oh my gosh, the medic.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly. I mean, he's sitting there telling you, I can recognize a guy's voice that sounded like a little girl if I knew him in the middle of Vietnam.
Right.
Okay. You got to accept that with some credibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought the defense did a remarkable job. And once again, a little disappointed with what the prosecution could have done with Mr. Martin. I felt like that was such a gift. They could have saved their entire weak case here, and they didn't do it.
What could they have done?
If he had simply said, well, if he had started to cry,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, genuinely, I don't mean a fake anything, but if he had gotten emotional, and if mm-hmm. he had said, what I said was, no, like, this can't be. Like, I don't want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Then there you go. It kind of reverts back.
Right.
I would believe that. I can
absolutely see.
Absolutely. Like, if somebody's giving you really bad news, you start to shake your head and say no.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would have accepted that with no hesitation. But when they asked him, are the police lying? I mean, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And all he could say is, I never told anybody to say it. I never told anybody to say it. I don't know. I didn't love his answer.
I felt bad for him. He was in a very tough position. And I just felt bad for him. I really did.
In a horrible position.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I felt bad for him, it didn't make me feel anger toward George.
Oh, exactly. Not at all.
But that's what they wanted me to do. And it just wasn't there.
It didn't work. We're talking with Cheryl McCollum, and we're talking about the big events that happened today in the George Zimmerman trial. Now, when they excused the jury for the day, they had a hearing about allowing the fact that there was, it's THC that was in Trayvon's system, and they're going to allow it. Now, everybody's saying, oh, this is such a big win for the defense, and I think there's two ways to look at it. One way, Michael in Minnesota brought up to me, and we'll be going to him in just a minute, that this will prove that Trayvon was on drugs. You can look at it that way, and that's absolutely true. But anybody that knows anything about marijuana, even if you've never smoked it, but you've been around people who have, it mellows you out. The last thing you do is sit there and pound on somebody. Yeah, it's going to prove he's on drugs, and that's a good thing for the defense, but I think the prosecution can really make hay of this to say that, hey, Trayvon was just mellow if he was on drugs. Right or wrong, Cheryl McCollum?
Well, I have to disagree with you on a couple of things. One, it goes exactly to what George claimed he was acting. So once again, George is telling the truth. He's not profiling.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the drug use means drug buyer, means drug holder. So that just proves you're being sneaky. Again, that's what George said he was acting like. He's just not acting right, right? He's staring. He's standing in the rain. So, again, it gives George's story credibility. Plus, there's a criminal activity going on. And the fourth thing that's going to happen, plenty of people have had reactions while using marijuana that doesn't stop them, depending on when they used it, and this is where the experts are going to come in, depending on when and how long it had been in the system, he could have absolutely, because it can also make you paranoid, that you would react first and punch somebody in the nose.
I'm not a drug expert, so I can't say. But all of those things, you're absolutely right again. That's why I have you on the show, because you sound smart, and therefore, by default, people think I'm smart, but you're doing all the work. That's what I love. Let's go to Michael in Minnesota. And, Michael, you and I were talking earlier about this day today, and we were just both in amazement. Give us your thoughts and your ideas, please.
Well, I want to echo what Cheryl said. I agree. I think it the drug use kind of eliminates that squeaky clean image of just a passerby that the jurors have been led to believe that Trayvon Martin was. So I do believe that it is a big win for the defense, and I'm glad the judge was able to see the case law and realize that that is a reversible error if she didn't allow it. So I'm really glad about
that.
That's
what we talked about on the show, that when he introduced it in his note on his opinion, the doctor, it's in, period.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We'd already heard it.
Yeah.
Several things. I thought the testimony of all of the witnesses from the Ostermans, was that their name, Mike and whatever, his wife, I thought they were very credible. I really liked the next couple, the medic and his wife, the real estate woman. And then I really thought that the two detectives were very credible. But what I want to ask Cheryl, in your experience with jurors, are they very forgiving of a parent who appears to be, I don't want to say lying by any means, but maybe stretching the truth to comport with, like, his former wife's testimony? Do you believe the jurors are thinking, boy, we were lied to by Trayvon's dad, or are they just going to give him a pass and believe the testimony of the cops, or will they? What do you anticipate? Do you have any thoughts?
I do. I think that what you've already seen the defense trying to do, even in their opening, they're showing that whether it's through Crump or whether their own initiation, they put out a photograph of that child that wasn't accurate.
Mm-hmm.
They painted a picture of him that wasn't true, and they have fought like crazy to keep anything negative about him out. Well, that's not fair to George, because you're sitting there claiming something about him that turns out he was, again, pretty dead on accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, now you've heard from a friend that said, you know, Trayvon used a racial slur. You've already had somebody, you know, walk through, this is not what he looked like at the time. Now you've got drug use. You know what I mean? You've slowly
mm-hmm.
got this, okay, so his supposed younger brother, which we found that it wasn't his brother, and something's happened during the engagement, they're not even married, that he was at school. So again, a lot of these questions, like we've talked about this whole time, O'Meara is asking them because the jury is going to be able to go, oh, yeah, so Trayvon wasn't in school, but he was only 17.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why would he call somebody that? And why would he smoke dope? And why would he, see, they're going to start to be able to paint this picture now.
Mm-hmm. And,
I thought
Cheryl,
today was a huge day for the defense.
It really was. Cheryl and Michael, we do have a caller with a question. I do have my hand on the disconnect button very quickly here. So let's go to area code 717. Are you there?
Yes, this is Mike in Pennsylvania. How are all you guys doing?
We're doing great, Mike. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Well, I got two comments and then a question.
Okay.
40 years old, I actually used marijuana a long time ago, I would say up until about 7 years ago. And I can
uh-huh.
see my comment would be, yes, it does keep you mellow, but usually when you're in a comfortable setting by yourself with people when you know, when you're out, say, at nighttime, it can have a reverse effect, and you can be very paranoid. So,
really?
It kind of depends on the situation you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Under what, you know, how you're going to feel and how you're going to react. My second point is, did Trayvon's father perjure himself today? It seems to me he might have actually lied under oath. It probably will get overlooked just for the simple fact, you know, it's his son that died. And my final comment would be, I think the point that no one's really talking to, or they're just starting to, is this jury going to start feeling some pressure at all, that they're going to at least have to give an involuntary manslaughter or something just for the simple reason they might feel threatened for themselves or their family when this trial is over. I know they're sequestered, but somehow, some way, they have to be feeling a little bit of pressure and knowing that just letting him off completely, there will be a lot of effects, you know, in the outside world. So I'd just like your opinions on what I said.
Michael, those are all three great comments. Thank you so much. I'm going to put you on hold so you can listen through the phone, okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. And let's go to Cheryl. Cheryl McCollum, let's start with the last comment first. And this has been brought up a lot on the forums.
Sure.
It's been brought up a lot to me personally, that people are worried that perhaps the jury will feel pressure to, if they really think he's innocent or not guilty, they'll still want to give him something because they'll feel pressure, political pressure. They'll worry that people will get hurt. They may, maybe they worry about their safety. I don't know. But I think it's a legitimate question because it, in the beginning, it was about race and it was so volatile and so hateful. Do you think that it is possible that that will happen, that they will in their own mind say, I think he's not guilty, but damn, I better find him guilty of something or else.
You know, you don't ever know what the jury is thinking or how much
mm-hmm.
they claim to have known beforehand. But there's no doubt that some of them should have at least had that cross their mind. You know, they're being sequestered now, but their names will be published at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's something that probably a lot of people are thinking about. I don't know a way around that. because again, let's say they give him something. If they give him involuntary manslaughter at this point, that is the biggest travesty. They
mm-hmm.
haven't proven that at all. And again, they had the father on the stand today, missed it. You know, they're arguing, saying, well, we didn't have enough time, you know, to research this witness. It
mm-hmm.
wouldn't have mattered. Even the judge said that.
Right.
You've played the tape for everybody else today. And let me tell you, remember we talked about that with Rodney King? They're
mm-hmm.
doing exactly what I thought they would do. They are playing it over and over
and over.
And over.
You said that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the jury, I mean, okay, he said asshole. They're over it.
Mm-hmm.
They said, he said fucking punks. They're over it. There's no
right.
shock. There's no, why would he talk that way? Okay, again.
Exactly.
And O'Mara is walking them through, just like I told you he would.
Mm-hmm.
You stop me when he sounds angry. He doesn't. He sounds
exactly.
like he's sitting there. No emotion. Just,
mm-hmm.
okay. You know, they always get away. I mean, I'm calling y'all, but I don't even know for what. That's how it
yeah.
sounds to me.
Me too.
Every time I call y'all, it ends the same way. You can clearly hear the 911 operator say, where's he at? And you hear ding, 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 ding. Well, he's getting out of the car because he's asked that question,
mm-hmm.
not because he's in hot pursuit.
Right.
They have... So much room to catch up on, and I don't think they're going to be able to do it.
What do you think about Trayvon's father? I don't think they would charge him with perjury because I think everybody's heart breaks for him. Absolutely, but that is interesting. Could he, if they had, you know, some jerk for a prosecutor, actually charge him with giving false testimony
if
with perjury?
If he lied, you know. But again, the way he answered the question with the pause. With the everything else he said was a ready answer. How did
mm-hmm.
you feel? I was heartbroken. Everything was so smooth and just he said it.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest question he was asked, he hesitated, and the answer was like, "Huh?" Like either you didn't think it was him or you did, and
right.
now we don't even know what you thought. Well, that should be clear.
Exactly.
And so again. When he's asked about when did you decide for sure it was Trayvon, only after you got Mr. Crump,
mm-hmm.
it's very clear the picture they're painting.
Got it.
When
and
you
then the
hear, okay.
No, go.
I was going to
say,
when you heard today even that they played the 911 tape for everybody in the mayor's office, and you want me to believe this wasn't a witch hunt?
Right.
That doesn't happen.
No, especially all together so they can all agree and get their testimonies together. It was wrong. It's just wrong.
And keep in mind, his father has sat there every day, all day, and heard every single witness.
Right.
How is that
right.
fair
mm-hmm.
that he can now testify? He heard what the detective said. George's mother didn't have that benefit.
Right.
George's uncle didn't have that benefit. None of his friends had that benefit.
Do you
so
think they can bring
slam dunk?
Can they bring that up in closing? Can they actually say, "Look how
why not? I mean, it was
one-sided.
Clear. You've looked at
yeah.
her. Yeah, you've looked at her every day.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the point is, I said this way back. I'm one of the folks that really believes the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We say that, but we don't mean that. But we
mm-hmm.
should mean it.
And Michael, I want to hear
a question that was coming in. The fact
right.
that he's got a similar transaction shouldn't have been a question that's coming in. You're protecting who? I mean, somebody's freedom's on the line that, again, quite frankly, where is the evidence that George Zimmerman committed murder
mm-hmm.
in the second degree, much less manslaughter?
We're talking with Cheryl McCollum. She is a professor and a legal analyst at the Investigative Cold Case Research Institute. We also have my unofficial sidekick on the phone, Michael from Minnesota. And then we're going to go to some more questions. But, Michael, you wanted to say something. Please continue, my dear.
Well, I don't know if Cheryl answered me. How do juries normally take opposing testimony like we heard today from two detectives who seemed very, sympathetic to Trayvon's father's pain, and the female officer even testified she was crying because she's a mother and she could feel his pain. But they claim that when asked the question, was that your son, he said no. So then you get the father up there that says, I didn't say that. How do juries normally handle opposing viewpoints? Do they cancel each other out and negate everything? Or
sometimes, if the other thing they can do is if they've already picked a side, they hear it the way they want to hear it. You're going to have folks on blogs and, Facebook that are completely convinced he was phenomenal. Other people think he perjured himself. So, again, it depends on what side they may already be on. Sometimes when they cancel it out, that's your reasonable doubt. But what I believe is going to happen is there's going to be some more shoes to drop. The defense
really?
Is not done. Well,
yeah,
they
alluded
done,
to that. I think they alluded to that about statements about the tape being cleaned up. That was obviously
right.
said somewhere, and they can use that. That will come out where it was said
okay.
or by whom or what.
But think about it. This has been going on a year. Tracy Martin has no idea how many speeches he's even given.
Mm-hmm.
In the first 3-4 months, there was a camera in his face every time he walked out of a building. At one point, if one time he said to the news media, the tape has been cleaned up, I can hear it now. Remember when Ms. Martin misspoke once and she got a chance to go back and say, hey, I didn't mean that, I meant this,
mm-hmm.
remember? If
yeah.
he said it one time and there's a tape or a video they can play, it's very damaging. Now, here's
mm-hmm.
where the police did a remarkable job. That lead detective, I thought, was remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
He kept saying, I sympathize with him. I choked up myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't sit in the room with the guy and not feel bad for him. But
mm-hmm.
what that man also told you is, I believe George. So
right.
he didn't let his emotions get in the way of his job. And
mm-hmm.
he didn't let his emotions and how he honestly felt for this father, which we all do, that doesn't negate the legality of what you're asked to do. So
mm-hmm.
you just say, oh, my God, Miss Fulton has been so regal and awesome, which she has. And you look at Tracy Martin and you see this very strong, healthy man who is broken. I mean, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Yes,
of
he is.
Of course. You feel pity, but you don't throw somebody in prison that didn't do anything wrong because you pity that person. That is what they gave the jury very clearly. The second detective said multiple times, I have children. I can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Neither can anybody on that jury. Neither can any of us. But she believes what he said, and she knew she didn't have probable cause, and she couldn't find fault with George's version.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I have a question from Truthy, who posted this earlier. And Truthy says, I'm very curious about the admissibility of this video reenactment. It seems like showing this would be incredibly prejudicial. Seeing is believing, after all. It seems unfair unless it would include all the details of George Zimmerman's statement, of which there are several versions, or unless this was standard evidence procedure and both sides had recreations of their versions, does with the equal budget production values. Is there a historical precedent for this? Thank you. That comes from Truthy.
That's an outstanding question. And
it
I
is.
Know
Are they
lawyer,
smart?
I don't know. It's a great question. I can only imagine the way this judge has run her courtroom that there's precedent, and that's what they were
mm-hmm.
arguing about today for a long, long time. Not just sidebar, but after the 5 o'clock hour. So
mm-hmm.
when she said that everything they objected to, she took it out of the video.
Right.
So now it's reduced, and then they're going to show the part they couldn't object to. And the deal is, you can show exhibits, and you can show things to push your theory. To say, okay, we're going to reenact it based on what he said, and we're going to show
mm-hmm.
you based on what he said. You can absolutely do that.
That's interesting. Let's go to the phones. We do have another phone call. This is area code 208. Area code 208. Do you have a question for Cheryl, Michael, or yours truly, Tricia?
Hi, Tricia. It's Peggy.
Hi.
And
hi, Peggy.
I spoke with you the other day. How is everyone tonight?
We are great. That was, I remember your phone call. It was wonderful, and I'm glad to hear from you again. What are your thoughts, my dear?
Well, I was just sitting here thinking that I was really glad that this courtroom is televised. I think that's going to alleviate all of the bantering, you know, wondering what if it's all true or whatever. I think that's going to be the benefit for keeping things. You were talking earlier about whether or not the jury would feel some pressure to make, you know, some sort of find him guilty of something in order to keep everybody at peace. And I'm just thinking that the fact that this is out there and everybody can see what's happening if they choose to. I mean, it's on YouTube and, you know, HLN and all over the place. So
right.
And it's too bad that the state can't call ineffective assistance of counsel because
right.
It's pretty scary what's going on there. I can't even believe that they brought any charges with what they've done. It's like Cheryl was saying earlier about the, you know, them not using Mr. Martin as, you know, a sympathy card or, you know, pull out some of his testimony.
Right.
And I think that they've missed every turn that they had in order to help their case along. And, boy, it's just a sad deal that there's been so much money spent on this case. And
I'm
glad that it's televised so people can see what's happened rather than wonder behind closed doors and not being able to see it if it truly played out that way. I think that will help people stay calm in the event that he isn't charged or found guilty of anything.
And I agree. And I agree with you absolutely, Peggy. And Cheryl, do you think this is going to change the way prosecutions might be handled in Florida, at least in this particular county? I mean, do you think there might be some little backdoor meetings going, we are never doing this again. This is stupid and ridiculous. What do you think the repercussions would be?
How many backdoor meetings has Florida had to have?
Well,
I mean,
that's
this
true.
Isn't their first time to the insane rodeo, all right? So you would think after Casey Anthony, somebody would have said, okay, let's try not to look stupid again.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're doing it. So, you know, sadly, when you rush to judgment and when you let people that do not live in your state dictate what's happening in your justice system, you're asking for exactly what you got. And this is a complete embarrassment for the state of Florida. And it ought to be. It absolutely
right.
ought to be. They should have taken a year to get these witnesses together. They should have never, ever been in a hurry. They should have known, hey, y'all, we've already had marches. We've already had some, you know, walkouts at the schools. We have to do this perfect. Let a jury finally decide. But we've got to do our job right. I don't see where they did their job right at all. Any mayor of any town that gets the victim's family and other witnesses together in a room and lets them have some type of conference over the 911 call, you are looking at a problem when you try to testify.
Can you imagine if it was reversed? And they were helping,
correct.
You know, that's what you have to do. You have to look at it in the reverse. You have to take it and turn it around and look
right.
at it. If it was the other side doing it, there would be such a horrible outcry. And rightly so. If George Zimmerman was, you know, getting help like this from the mayor
and ethical.
It is not. No,
I mean,
it is not at all.
Everybody started yelling and screaming that George was getting special treatment. Where? Where has that come to light? Trayvon has gotten special treatment. He's gotten special treatment from CNN. He's gotten special treatment from Reverend Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who had zero facts before they got involved. They put a picture out of a 12-year-old. They made us all go, oh, my gosh, I mean, who would have shot that baby? Wasn't him. He was 6 foot. And so that's what goes to what we're talking about with this jury. The little information they claimed they did have, and they all knew some. Nobody had been completely under a rock.
Mm-hmm.
They now know it's like that onion, and they've peeled away every piece. You're like, okay, every single thing I believed, now is it true? So what do you do with that information? You know you've been lied to, misled, facts have been misrepresented, misconstrued, whatever you want to call it, lying by omission, lying outright. They've done it all here.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl,
and when you leave, go ahead, honey.
What did you think of the judge's ruling regarding the future testimony of the defense witness who could speak? He's now, he's a retired law officer, and now he is a witness, you know, in trials and whatnot. But she limited what he could say. She limited the fact that he can't say that George didn't act within the laws of Florida. Why not? The laws of Florida. How else can they get in?
She is going to charge them with what those laws are, and they are only going to be able to understand from her. She's going to do that. That's her gig. What will probably happen again tomorrow is when that person gets on the stand, O'Mara will ask something, and there will be an objection. But again, you're going to have six people there going, well, I want to know the answer to that. Why can't he tell me?
Why can't
and that's all
me?
O'Mara's after. And that's all O'Mara's after. And that's, where his genius comes in. Go ahead and object. You look like you're hiding something every time you object.
Mm-hmm.
Think about O'Mara. This was brilliant. Every time he jumped up and said, I object about the 911 call, what did he do? I'd like him to play it entirely, Judge.
Right.
They played it over and over. And again, the translation is, we don't have anything to hide. We want you to hear every bit of it. And then the prosecution did himself no favors, Tricia. Every night you say, thanks, you know, Cheryl, thanks for coming on. You don't go, thanks, right?
No.
So if I get up and I say, well, Tricia told me, thanks. Okay, you technically said thanks, but the prosecutor keeps screaming those profanities. Like, he is so mad. George doesn't. So
it's
the jury's going to go.
It's such a mischaracterization of the facts.
It is, but it's going to come back to kick him in the pants because the jury's sitting there going, that ain't what I heard.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't change the cadence or the tone or the inflection and believe it's going to have the same meaning. So now they're going to think, well, you're making a mountain out of a molehill, and maybe you've been doing that the whole freaking time.
What did you think of the fight, George's personal trainer from the gym? Thought he was terrific.
He was very good. And what did he say? Let's remind our people. This is the person that worked with George in the gym, and he was very precise and succinct. He was wonderful. And what did he say, Cheryl?
There was nothing they could even object to.
Right.
He kept talking about all the different maneuvers and about MMA fighting, and he told his background that was so solid. I mean, you can't refute it. You can't impeach him. He's done it. He's won it. He's coached it. I mean, end of it. Mm-hmm. Even his brother is very accomplished, so he's been around it coming and going since he was a little kid. So he started talking about...
The biggest point he made, Trish, was that George Zimmerman came in without any athletic ability.
Mm-hmm.
He had never been athletic. He was very soft. And while he was successful in the weight loss that was a result of these workouts, he never became proficient. He never even knew how to throw a punch correctly.
So he never
advanced the kicking or anything. So the jury, he came in, he gave it a grade of a 0.5 on a scale of 1 to 10 of fitness. And he said George came in at a 0.5, and he wouldn't give an answer as to where he left. Apparently in the deposition he said 1 to 3, but today he said he never advanced to even kicking. He never advanced beyond the throwing a punch. He couldn't throw a punch. He never could have engaged.
And I don't think there's anybody that's going to look at George and not believe that completely.
Exactly.
If he answers the 911 call, when he gets out of the truck and starts walking briskly, he's out of breath immediately.
Out of breath. What that did, and I did miss that testimony, so thank you for the recap, Michael. Well, what that did is it showed George Zimmerman to be kind of this pudgy, middle-aged guy who doesn't know how to throw a punch.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
That
wouldn't
is,
be able to
but he did more
himself.
Than that, Tricia. He did
yes.
more than that. He said, once somebody sucker punches you in the face, preferably the nose, and gets you on the ground, your life is absolutely in danger.
Right.
He was real clear that you were at such a disadvantage, you ought to believe.
The person on the top that has all the advantage from gravity, he talked about.
Yep.
And they even did the demonstration where he straddled the defense attorney and showed the jurors exactly how helpless the person on the bottom would be or at the disadvantage. So it was really effective, I thought.
And Cheryl, what could the prosecution do now to counter that? Is there anything they can do to counter that? Because I think that is so imperative and important that they've got to prove that George can swing and make a punch, and he can't.
Right.
How can they overcome that?
But remember,
well,
their turn is over. Their turn's over. They brought
and
nobody
they
up.
Rebuttal. But
well,
and their cross of him, Tricia, was just pathetic, I thought.
Was it really?
The more he talked, the more credible he was for George.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the cross was like, you got to quit talking to him.
Just
stop
talking.
No way
don't
he's
say
helping.
Anything. Right.
Just don't. Yeah, I would just say, Your Honor, I ain't got nothing to ask him. I mean, whatever. I mean, because
oh, God.
Really, honestly, the more he talked, it was like, hey, yeah. I mean, you get sucker punched in the nose and your eyes are watering, your nose is bleeding. You fall on the ground in excruciating pain and then somebody's on top of you hitting you with MMA-style punches, which is what their other witness claimed, the state's witness claimed. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, and you've got an expert saying you're going to lose it every time.
It is absolutely. I don't see. I guess my question is, I don't see where the prosecution can go from here at all. Period. Done.
That's what
you
I'm
know?
Saying. They can't call another expert. Their chance is over with the experts. All they can do is cross-examine, and if they want to call somebody back up, they can. But I'm saying their turn is done. It doesn't. It's not like they get to bring in, you know, Frank, who's an MMA fighter, going, oh no, I've got more leverage if I'm on the ground on my back than any other position. They lost that opportunity. It's gone.
Cheryl.
Peggy is calling in, and Cheryl, she wants to ask you a question. Peggy, go ahead.
Hey. So the prosecutor won't have another chance to like Martinez did, go through the rebuttal after the defense is through?
They will, sure, but they can only call people they've already called. He won't
right.
have a chance to introduce anything new. So I'm saying if there's some expert out there, and I hate to tell y'all, but there are some that teach once you get on the ground, your legs are the strongest part of your body, so use them. And they would have, like, for example, told George how to, you know, get around on Trayvon's shoulders and pull him back to the ground. They didn't call that person.
Right.
They didn't call him. They didn't
Were
call
they
George's coach. And say, hey, didn't you teach him how to fight on the ground in that part of Taekwondo and harness and MMA fighting? They didn't do that.
Were they just so arrogant in their belief, do you think, that they were going to win, that they didn't do the basics? I mean, that's kind of what it's sounding like to me now.
Tricia, it doesn't look like arrogance to me. It looks like Duke lacrosse.
Oh, God, that's
somebody
much worse.
Knew. You went after somebody you knew damn well you didn't have the evidence against. And again, there's proof of it because they bypassed the grand jury. There's proof of it because the lead detective said he didn't have probable cause and felt pressure to charge him. You've got the city manager and the mayor involved on the side without the chief of police knowing. That's dirty. That's unethical.
Right.
I don't care who you are. That does not happen.
We do have a question for the chat.
And I was with you, Trisha.
Oh, go ahead.
I was
Peggy, go
so
ahead.
Totally, I was so totally convinced that this was over for George. I was so totally convinced that he was at fault here. I mean, my heart was in it 100%, and now I'm pissed.
I've been misled. I've misled other people based on what I was told. It makes me furious. Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. We do have a question from the chat room. Why, and this is from Ranch Hand, why is the state fighting so hard to keep out this animation evidence that the defense wants to show the jury? Why are they trying to keep it out?
Because it's a lot. It's going to put all the pieces together for the jury. So they don't even have to use their imagination. They're going to go, oh, yeah, I see that. And as soon as they see it, there's no more question about where was George, at what time, and what was he saying, and what was he doing. They're doing all the hard work for him, and they do not want that to happen.
And Michael from Minnesota.
Examine a video game.
Well, that's true. Yeah, how do you do that, Michael from Minnesota? Your thoughts on that? Any ideas? Any thoughts running through that wonderful brain of yours?
Regarding
What we were just talking about the animation, about being upset, about being misled, about the fact that this is like the Duke Lacrosse case. There's nothing there, but the difference is the governor's not going to step in and fire the prosecutor, and he's not going to be charged, or she's not going to be charged with anything, and that governor's not going to apologize to George Zimmerman, you know, like they did in the Duke Lacrosse case, at least in the Duke Lacrosse case, as bad as it was. And that's where these guys hired a stripper for a bachelor party, and the stripper claimed all these horrific things happened to her, rape, she was called horrible names, and it was all a big lie. And the prosecutor in that case, Nifong, I believe was his name, went ahead with it anyway, and basically the whole thing was just a big lie. It was horrible. And the governor came in and said, you know, they're cleared, everybody is cleared, and the prosecutor was charged with a crime, and they were cleared. I mean, as bad as it was, at least the Duke Lacrosse players got satisfaction in knowing that they were cleared by everybody and exonerated by the government, officials. That's not going to happen to George Zimmerman. He still may be found guilty of manslaughter. My point was, Michael, doesn't that make you angry that you were misled? I feel I was misled.
Oh, I feel like I was terribly misled and terribly let down by the state. I agree with Peggy completely, and I've made my stance known on this case. I entered it really not knowing anything except for a shooting occurred, and it was a young child, was my initial impression. And so my sympathies were probably with the Martins and Trayvon until this case started, and I really purposely avoided anything. I've never partaken in the chat room discussions. I wanted to go into this and watch the trial and get my evidence from the trial, and I've been really disappointed. I don't know if more time would have helped the prosecution to maybe develop a case or what we are seeing, but what we are seeing is such a debacle, and I do think George is entitled to an open apology. I agree with you. I think you're right. I think because of the racial unrest and the heat and venom on the both sides, really, I just don't think that they want to get involved or embattled I can understand why they wouldn't, but that doesn't mean, sometimes you have to do what's right regardless of the consequence, and I do think he's owed an apology from what I've seen.
So far, from what we've seen so far. We do have a question. This is area code 901. 901, do you have a question for Cheryl McCollum or anybody on our unofficial panel tonight?
Yeah, I sure do have a question. And let me say, George Zimmerman in his trial, the prosecution fabricated this. The lame brain media, you know, carried it, and this whole debacle is just a tragedy that this is happening. Should have never made it this far. But my question to them is this. you know, they keep, you know, waving the flag about Zingerman, pursued Trayvon, disregarded mm-hmm. the orders from the non-emergency operator. That's been disproven, discredited on day two of the trial.
Mm-hmm.
On day one of the trial, he never followed Trayvon. As a matter of fact, I think the non-operator caller, non-emergency number operator, helped Zingerman from actually taking the bait, because I think Trayvon was running behind the building trying to bait Zingerman to get him to take the bait and come follow him down the dog path
mm-hmm.
and jump him from there.
That's interesting. So, that's it, like trying to say, hey, come get me, buddy, I'm running type thing.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you see.
But please continue.
Because he goes up to, notice he go up to Zingerman's vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and as he was approaching, he had his hand, you know, his waistband, whatever. Any undercover police or cop see, you know, intruder coming, they're not going to sit there in their vehicle and
sure.
not, you know, get out and do something.
Mm-hmm.
Martin went up just to see whether or not Zingerman was undercover cop or police. Once he found out that he was not, he circled around the car, then he ran,
mm-hmm.
you know, a little stunt to try to get Zingerman to take the bait. And Zingerman took the bait. He went out, and the dispatcher asked him, where, you know, are you following him? He said, yeah,
mm-hmm.
I am. He said, well, let's not do that. So I think Zingerman said, okay. Then they, you know, established where they were going to meet from that point on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think the non-operator, I mean, the operator, caller, saved him from, you know, Trey Martin doing something more crucial to him than punching him in the nose.
That could be. Cheryl McCollum, what about that theory? I think that's a very interesting theory. Sir, thank you so much for calling. I'm going to put you on hold so you can listen to the answer, okay?
Thank you.
No,
thank
you.
I'm going to put you on hold.
And I think he was very clear, and I think he makes a valid point. You
mm-hmm.
and I have talked on this show ad nauseum, and I have openly said, why didn't he make it all the way home?
Mm-hmm.
Why would he be out of breath? Because he ran further than from the cut to the back door. He didn't go home on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fixing to show that with the time lapse that he had, the 4.5 minutes that George is on the phone, he doesn't go home. The 2 minutes that we don't have anything on recording, he didn't go home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in almost 7 minutes, you could walk that whole complex.
Right. So what was he doing?
His intent was never to go home. And
mm-hmm.
again, what they're going to show, Trayvon never called for help on the phone. George did. He never told his friend he was needing help. She didn't even bother to try him back after a couple times. She didn't
mm-hmm.
even learn anything until he got back from school. Nobody was worried about him. His own father doesn't look for him all night.
Right.
Right? And then again,
right.
when the person comes out their back door, does Trayvon even slow down throwing punches?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-mm.
He didn't need help.
Not even when he said, I'm calling 911.
Right. He just
he
kept going.
He didn't stop.
Mm-mm.
Oh, my gosh. So what do we know is on deck for tomorrow? Do we have any idea who's going to be called by the defense, Cheryl?
No, but you know who I would love to see?
Who's that?
The ex-fiance.
Oh, okay. What do you think? Think that might happen?
Well, she was in the room when Tracy heard the 911 call. They are
mm-hmm.
now no longer together, so there's no loyalty. And
we're talking about the ex-fiance.
On the way home, yeah.
Of Trayvon's dad, right.
Right.
They're no longer together.
And you don't think he said to her, I don't think that was Trayvon. I know it wasn't.
Right.
You know, come on. He said something to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Who better? She says on a videotape, you know, she loved Trayvon like a son. Really?
Mm-hmm.
You loved him like a son? But you didn't recognize his voice either?
Right.
I mean, I would love to see her.
We don't know if Go ahead, Michael.
We know that court is starting at 8:30 with a continuation of this Daubert hearing or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
What is the proper name for it, Cheryl?
Daubert, you're right.
Okay. And according to the defense, it's going to take a little while, and then they're going to end the day supposedly with another proffer of a witness. But then I know that one of the people they are calling is the law enforcement witness that we were just talking about earlier, that the judge has excluded portions of his testimony that he cannot testify to. But they're, like Cheryl said, we know we'll see him tomorrow, and the defense will obviously ask the questions. And I think the judge even said you'll have the opportunity to cross and rebut. So he's going to be allowed. What was his name again? Pruitt or something like that?
I can't recall. O'Mara has a cadence and a rhythm to what he's doing, if you've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I like to listen to him. He's very calming.
Oh, yeah. But, like, his witnesses, you kind of think, okay, the detective's good, the second detective, and you think, okay, they're not going to call the dad, so you kind of relax and listen to the, you know, fighting expert. And then almost out of nowhere, here's the dad. What?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's going to be some more surprises. I really do. And I think the more they put up, they're going to put up like 20 or so. I think
mm-hmm.
there's going to be some more twists and turns and some more kind of in your face.
Cheryl, do you think we need to hear one more person identify George's voice? Do you think it at some point becomes just too much for the jurors, or do you think if they can keep...
It's a close call, because you don't want to ever stop too soon, that I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to say, well, six is enough when you really needed eight. And what they need to do is they need to show, okay, they called two people. Two.
Mm-hmm.
And now I called the third one for him, and I'm going to show he's not credible. And then I'm going to call the fiance. I just have a feeling somebody else is coming that's going to be able to say what Tracy Martin said.
Now, can Crump be called as the family attorney? Can Crump be called?
No, attorney-client privilege. Nope.
But about statements he's made publicly, because both he and his law partner are giving press conferences constantly. So can they be called out to talk about anything they've said publicly?
No, and let me tell you what's happening with these press conferences. That's what you do when you're losing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you do when the people are, I guess they call them low information, because those are the sound bites they're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to call a press conference and say, hey, you know, they argued to have this thing thrown out, and they're not going to do it. So it sounds like they're winning. Well, we all knew she wasn't going to throw it out.
Right.
She ain't got that kind of guts. So, but if you're not watching the trial, and to Peggy's
mm-hmm.
point, there are people that watched O.J. Simpson that still didn't think he had anything to do with anything. Okay.
Right.
There are people that are just not going to believe it no matter what. But those folks that aren't watching the trial and just waiting to get the sound bites at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
they don't know what we know.
No,
they don't
sure
know how bad it is. And you can read a couple of blogs that are out there, and you're, like you have said so many times, Tricia, are they watching the same trial?
I know.
I say that every night I read the chat room. I just think,
man,
oh my gosh, we were talking about two separate cases.
Right.
I'm not looking tonight, by the way.
Well, it's very calm, and I'm very proud of the people in chat. They're bringing up some excellent points, and everyone's being calm, and I love that. Let me just tell you what I have in store for tomorrow night. I'm going to have a friend on, and she at the very beginning, she said everything that we now know about George Zimmerman. She said, you know, he didn't do what they said. She was the first one that brought out the picture being 12. And I argued with her. I said, I'm sorry. I said, you know, I was all on Trayvon's side. And everything she has said, she has a blog, has come true. So her name is Vicky. She's going to be on with us tomorrow night as well, Cheryl. You'll get a really, really big kick out of her. And I would love to hear
fantastic
somebody call in that has a differing viewpoint. And I know it's scary, but I promise you I will treat you with respect. No one's going to jump on you. Just call in tomorrow and tell us why you think that I'm wrong or Cheryl's wrong. The number, just jot it down and then think about it, 760-825-0933. We'll be back here tomorrow night, 9 o'clock Eastern. Or if you know somebody that can argue the other side, give them our number. Have them call in. I would love to hear it because, you know what, anything can happen. Right now, it's not looking good for the state at all. So we're going to wait and see what happens the rest of the week. Until then, we're going to continue discussing. Michael, thank you so much again. I love it when you call in. You're just a doll. And Cheryl, what can I say? You're bringing everything right up to the clearest point that we can possibly see. And I appreciate your insight and your willingness to come on every single night. Thank you.
Yeah, I enjoy Cheryl very much.
Okay, guys, thank you so much. And we'll have you on tomorrow night with Vicki. And I hope that everybody else will join us tomorrow. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. Remember, the opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. And so here's the deal. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuth.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, if you get all upset, my darling angels, don't take it out on the forums. Okay, you come to me, Trisha, on Trisha's True Crime Radio, and we'll do our best to make you happy. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. We're back again tomorrow night discussing the George Zimmerman case, 9 p.m. Eastern, and we will always discuss true crime and current events, and we'll do it with common sense, of course. Good night, everyone.